This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Lucy May. Comedian Rajiv Sadayal, a University of Cincinnati engineering graduate and former Procter & Gamble marketer who left corporate life for stand-up comedy, is back home for two performances at Go Bananas Comedy Club in Montgomery. It's the first time he's been back in Greater Cincinnati to perform since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic, and his act has changed. He says he's avoiding political humor in his latest shows and sticking with more autobiographical material, all while staying TV clean, no cursing or blatantly offensive jokes. Joining me now to talk about how his approach to stand-up has changed and when U.S. politics stop being funny to him is stand-up comedian Rajiv Sadayal. Thank you so much for being here, Rajiv.
Thank you for having me, Lucy. It's great to join you again.
Do you have questions or comments for Rajiv or about the world of stand-up comedy? You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. Rajiv, your first time on our program was back in 2015, which seems like a lifetime ago at this point. How has your act changed since then?
You know, I feel like it's always been autobiographical, but I've leaned more into that because of the rise of Twitter, now X, and all other social media. You know, comedians and people who are not comedians, everybody's a comedian, right, are all fishing from the same pond. And so you might think of this really brilliant current affairs joke, but guess what? Three people probably just told the exact same joke. We're all fishing from the same pond. So I feel like if you fish from your internal pond, go within, there's more original material there.
Is that why you're doing fewer political jokes, or is there something about how politics has changed that's influenced that decision too?
I think it's a bit of both. I mean, is it funny anymore? I mean, like, whether you're on the left or the right, it just feels like people are so sensitive. They're so touchy, you know, and people will say to me now, they're like, oh, it's always been like that. I'm like, no, it hasn't always been like that. It wasn't like that when I was growing up in the 80s and 90s, certainly in the 90s. And even after that, I think it changed a lot, maybe around 2014, 2015. And I don't know. People are touchy. It's just, I'm not having fun talking about it anymore. I feel like I said everything I needed to say in my last solo show, The Man in the Middle. And that went over really well because, you know, I'm left of center. It was a pretty anti-Trump show, but I got a standing ovation from probably a mostly pro-Trump crowd. And I think even then things were okay, but they've seemed like they've gone off the rails even since then.
Wow. Yet I understand, you know, Republican presidential candidate Vivek Ramaswamy. Does that make it at all tempting to bring politics back into your act?
Of course it does. I mean, if you know somebody, you know, I grew up with him now. I'm 10 years older than he is. So, you know, but we were ball boys at the tennis tournament together, the Western Southern Tennis Tournament. You know, I was a supervisor, I think, when he was a ball boy. So my publicist was like, oh, so you were his boss. I'm like, I don't know if I'm going to go around telling everybody I was Vivek Ramaswamy's boss, but sure, it does make for good media.
Yeah, no kidding. So did he really mess up as a ball boy, or was he a good ball boy?
Should I tell you that? Yeah, he threw all of his balls to the right, to the far right, you know? Every time we wanted him to throw it up the middle, you just have to throw it up the middle, and he threw it to the right.
That was good. See, you still got it. You could still do the political stuff.
There you go. A soft joke maybe people will accept.
Yeah. Yes, yes. Now, here's how Vivek Ramaswamy introduced himself during the first GOP debate.
So first, let me just address a question that is on everybody's mind at home tonight. Who the heck is this skinny guy with a funny last name, and what the heck is he doing in the middle of this debate stage?
Do you think he was trying to bring humor into the debate? Did you think he was funny?
Yes and no, maybe in response to your two questions. Look, I mean, humor is subjective. I do think that he was pretty witty at times, and I think that he jumped in and got his points made. You know, that was, I think, a very similar statement to what Barack Obama said back in his day at the debates and some things like that. So it was interesting to hear someone who's gone to the far right. You know, and again, I'm not imputing the far right or the far left. Well, yeah, I am. But I am imputing the far left and the far right. That's what I do. I'm the man in the middle. So I have to do that. But, I think it's a choice. I think he saw a lane to say, look, if I go in this MAGA lane, I can probably get a lot of support. I don't know how much, you know, South Asians, Indians, there are a lot of us who, you know, I'm left of center. I know a lot of right of center Indians. Don't get me wrong. But I don't know too many who are that far to the right. So to me, it kind of seems like a play more than it seems like anything else. So yeah, I think he was funny at times, but I don't know. It just seems like he was hyper aggressive. And hey, you know what? People are talking about him. I've worked in marketing for years and no publicity is bad publicity.
Yeah. So you're saying like he wasn't always like a young Republican. He wasn't, you know, a young Republican when he was a tennis ball boy at the Western Southern Open, as far as you could tell.
Well, that would be, yeah, I think that'd be a bit disingenuous if I'm like, you know, there's nothing like the 10-year-old I once knew. But that said, he and I did have brunch on Super Bowl Sunday morning. So the day in L.A. that the Bengals went to the Super Bowl, we were there. We had brunch together. He and I one-on-one in Beverly Hills. And we took an Uber together down from Beverly Hills to Inglewood to go watch the game. Now, we watched it separately, but I thought that was kind of cool. So I'm still in touch with him. And, you know, he's always been nice to me. So I don't want to come down on him personally. I want to be very, very clear about that and careful about that because our families are friends. And, you know, but the thing is, once you put your political positions out there, it's like jokes. Once you put a joke out there, people can react any way they want. And they may know you personally, but they may be like, I didn't think that was funny. Same thing with your political positions, you know, and his political positions are, you know, he's rolling those back more than his hairline. So,
oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, I can say that. I'm bald.
Your parents are from India, but you were born in Hamilton, I believe, and grew up in Fairfield. You sometimes joke about being one of the few kids of color growing up.
Yeah, that's correct.
My parents did not experience much racism growing up in Ohio. And I can't believe that people are still racist. I mean, that is so gay. I can say that because I actually have a gay brother. And it was a big moment when he came out of the closet. Well, we're Indian, so he came out of the cupboard. I remember he sat down with my parents and he said, the reason I have not brought a girl home for so many years is I'm gay. And the room got very tense and very awkward, kind of like it did just now. It wasn't as hard as the conversation I had to have with my parents at the time. When I said the reason I haven't brought a girl home for so many years is I'm a loser. My parents suspected for a while. I think he's one of those losers.
So I have to confess, I thought we were playing a different clip just then. But, you know, the magic of live radio. You talk about your brother. Let's go to that first. You have jokes about, you know, identity issues. You mention your brother in that clip. You also poke fun at yourself, of course, talking about being one of those losers. How did you decide whether to kind of talk about your brother's sexual orientation as part of your act?
It's so jarring. I'm like, oh my gosh, is the clip over? Were people laughing? I go, I think they were. I was there. I seem to remember that. That's really funny. It's just so funny to see it like that or hear it like that. So, you know, I checked in with Rakesh Sathyal, my brother, who's a fairly prominent queer author and editor. And, you know, I asked him again, I said, is it still okay that I do these jokes, you know, evolving landscape? And he said, I really appreciate your checking in. Yes. He goes, it's totally fine. I know where you're coming from. And your jokes are not offensive. You know, he goes, they're not offensive to me. They're about me. So I get to say whether I think they're offensive or not. And so I think that that part is good because in comedy or in any storytelling, the question always comes back to the storyteller. Whose story is it to tell, right? Is it your story to tell? You know, you have a bad breakup. Is it yours or is it his or is it hers? You know, is it theirs? Whose is it? You know, and it's like, well, if it's your perspective on what happened, and as long as you're not being intentionally malicious, you know, I think crowds are smart. You know, people are dumb, but crowds are smart. And you know, the thing is that, you know, people can tell if you're being good natured or mean spirited. And mean spirited, they don't really want to truck with, but good natured, and they're going, all right, this seems like, you know, he's telling a joke. I think they'll be okay. Yeah. And in that regard, I think that people still can take a joke if it's more autobiographical, more social. I think if you veer into the political again, I don't know, it just doesn't work as well. But keep it personal, I think it's okay.
I want to remind our listeners, I'm talking with stand-up comedian Rajeev Sathyal, who's home to perform for the first time since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. You can join the conversation by calling 513-419-7100 or emailing talk@wvxu.org. So the clip I thought we were going to play, you have a funny part of your act where you talk about dating and trying to date as one of the few kids of color and how sometimes the captain of the cheerleading squad would call and your dad would get excited and you were just like, no, dad, she's calling for help with her homework. And I have to confess, I was a nerd who got calls from the popular good-looking boys to help with their homework, too. So I totally related to that on so many levels. What you've talked a little bit about this, but what makes kind of race and ethnicity a more rich place for you to really mine for comedy, more so than politics these days?
Because it's your own, you know, and you can take any stance you want on it. I think that racial and ethnic jokes still land, even in crowds where they say it won't, or, you know, these alt comedy rooms are like, that stuff isn't going to work, it's too hacky. I tell you, it's a gut laugh. People will just laugh at it. Again, not, it will depend on the joke, of course, but it's your own lived experience. And I remember when I was putting together my first solo show about my dating life called No Man's Land, and, you know, you tied in some of that stuff with I'm a Loser and things like that, not to, you know, too directly quote the Beatles. But at any rate, I remember having a bunch of people over my apartment, mostly actors, writers, and there was one director. And as I was going through my material preparing for this solo show about dating, we took a break, and she had been a director for a while and had directed a little bit of TV and plays and things like that. And she goes, I love your material about dating in LA and in the United States and all those things. And it's great. It's original. It's cool. Whatever. She goes, but I got to tell you, even though your take is original, those topics have been covered. She goes, where you've got me locked in is this stuff about arranged marriage. And if you can't find a woman, maybe you can go to India and your parents can set you up. She goes, that is a completely foreign concept to me. She goes, and I'm Jewish. And she goes, and I still have nothing related to that at all. I mean, she goes, there's a little bit of that in my community, but not to the extent that it is in the Indian community. And she goes, the more that you mine that material, the stuff that people have not heard, the more original it's going to be.
Ah, sounds like good advice. Mm-hmm. I want to ask you about something that's definitely not funny and wasn't funny. In 2022, you emceed a program for a charitable organization, and you were attacked for that work online. Tell us briefly about this gig that you performed and the fallout that occurred.
So yeah, that was, it feels like a long time ago. It wasn't really that long, but it was in LA, and it was a charitable organization. They were having a speaker come in from India, and evidently I didn't know anything about her. I signed the contract just saying, hey, I'll come MC this program because it's a good cause. And here's the thing. A lot of the time as the MC, you don't know who the other people on the bill are going to be. Even if you ask, it can change. That's why it says lineups subject to change. You may or may not know. So one of the keynote speakers was apparently someone who had been accused of making fairly inflammatory remarks about non-Hindus. So obviously India is 86% Hindu. It's primarily a Hindu nation, even though it is secular. So there's that debate going on right now in India and has been going on for a while. That said, apparently she had made a number of statements that were anti-Islamic. Now, in my Google searches, I couldn't find anything definitive, right? So I was going, all right, look, if this person is really, you know, a really bad seed, I don't want to be associated with her either. But what happened is I got about 1,000 A lot of them were automated. Some of them were not. Emails to my inbox drowning me, you know, basically saying, don't do this. And it turned out probably a lot of those email addresses were fake. And then I got attacked on Twitter. People saying, why would you share a stage with her and all this? And I'm like, guys, can we understand what we're talking about here? Like, what's the actual issue? And no one would really tell me and clue me in on what was actually going on. So I said, guys, in the event of that or failing that, I'm going to have to go forward with this gig. Plus, I've already said that I'm going to do it. I can't find any real reason. You're just attacking me for saying you're associating with someone who is accused of doing things. Okay, right. But are those credible? What's happening? So the day of the program, I actually said that I wasn't, or actually maybe a few days before, I told the organizers, I go, you know, I don't know if I feel safe. I don't know if I feel safe with this. And they said, we're going to send a couple of armed guards to your house to pick you up, and they're going to stand by your side throughout the entire program. I'm like, well, now I'm in. Because that just sounds really cool. And I had only one other time where I had a bodyguard down in Florida. And I got to tell you, I mean, the bodyguard like walks you to the bathroom, makes sure no one's in there, stands outside. You can use the bathroom for as long as you want. You come outside, they walk. If you walk to one side of the room, they walk to the same side. And I'm sitting in the green room, and I'm a friendly guy. So I'm chatting him up and saying, you know, how's your day going? And he goes, look, I'm more than happy to talk to you, but just so you know, this is your space and I'm completely paid to sit here in silence. So you don't have to talk to me. This is your green room. I'm just here to protect you. And I'm like, oh man, this is what it must feel like to be 10 times as famous as I really am, because I've got some degree of fame. I'm like on the E-list, but man, this is what it must feel like to be an A-list celebrity. And so it was pretty cool. I thought, all right, I'll go down and take these two armed guards with me. And they were really protective. There was a protest across the street. I think it got a little loud, but nothing really transpired. And in fact, you know, most of the people in attendance are Hindu, but there was a Muslim man who walked right up to me and said, this is a great event. I really enjoyed your comedy. And he and I have become, I don't want to say like really great friends, but certainly good enough acquaintances that we've hung out a couple of times. He's been over to my place. And in fact, He and a Hindu man threw an event for Diwali, which is a Hindu festival. And I told him, I said, I've never heard of a Muslim throwing an event for a Hindu holiday. How do we reciprocate? How do we come together as a Hindu community and maybe throw an event for Eid or one of your holidays and get people together? Because that's what I'm about. I'm about diversity and inclusion, maybe not equity, but diversity and inclusion. And I really feel like, you know, this is a pluralistic society, India and America, and we should lead by example. So, you know, getting the armed guards was cool, but doing something that I felt aligned with my values was even more cool.
Well, and you wrote a really lengthy online response to that whole thing where you made, you know, a number of the points you made just now. You talked about how cool it was to have these armed guards and how, you know, that how that was the one awesome silver lining of the whole thing. But clearly it was upsetting and you were angry about what had happened, how you were targeted. Why was it so important for you to respond in such detail the way you did?
Yeah, it's because I don't respond to comments on social media. It's a funnyindian.com policy. Of course, I run funnyindian.com, but it's, you know, and I could change it just by opening my mouth, but it makes it sound a lot grander and bigger if I say it's our policy. And so, look, it's my policy. I mean, I don't respond to comments online. And why? It's like, because it's just too easy to go down the rabbit hole. I think a lot of people argue in bad faith. And only recently did I hear a great piece of advice, which was engage with the best argument, engage with the best argument across the other side of the aisle. And most people don't do that, though. They do it in bad faith. So I thought, you know what, I'll do this on my Substack and I will go ahead and go point by point. And Lucy, if you've read it, then you know I did, because yes, it is really long. And I really kind of went through everything I felt, and I was pretty angry, and I still am angry if I think about it. I mean, knock on wood, fortunately, nothing really transpired after that, but I was scared and I was worried. And I think that this is exactly the type of thing that harms society is, you know, when you hear bad speech, the answer is not silence. It's more speech. It's talking to each other and engaging with each other. And, you know, that's why I created The Man in the Middle, was to do a show that was anti-Trump, but I wanted to give it to Trump supporters and I wanted to meet them where they were. And I didn't want to just get on stage and say, well, this guy's a piece of garbage and you're a piece of garbage if you support him. Well, that's not going to reach anyone. And I don't believe that. I mean, I think 1 out of 7 or 1 out of 9 Trump supporters voted for Obama. So we can't just say, well, they're all racist. Well, they voted for a black guy for president. So I don't know if that really tracks. I'm not saying that, you know, gets you out of the woods if you have other racist beliefs. But I do believe that it's not that simple. I think there's a lot more to it than that.
Yeah. You're performing at Go Bananas on Thursday, September 14th, on Sunday, September 17th. What's it like for you to step up on that stage and perform? That's really where your comedy career started, isn't it?
It is. I got on stage for the first time in 1998. My gosh, that's even before I really started doing comedy in earnest in 2005. And Josh Sneed was running the open mic, and he's still doing comedy today. And he was in my promo video that we put together to promote these shows. You know, it was the first place I ever did stand-up comedy. And, you know, I guess I had kind of been doing it since I was 13 or 14 because I was Indian hosting all of these Diwali events and holy events. But Go Bananas is the first proper comedy club in which I did stand-up. So to be able to perform there is incredible, to come back and headline. I've headlined there before, but it's been a while. It was pre-pandy, as the Zoomers are saying. So I'm happy to come back and do a couple more shows on Thursday and on Sunday.
Well, I've been talking with stand-up comedian Rajiv Sadiyal. He'll perform at Go Bananas Comedy Club in Montgomery on Thursday, September 14th and Sunday, September 17th. You can find more information on our website, including a link to get tickets. Our website is wvxu.org. Rajiv, thank you so much for your time today. It's been fun talking with you.
Thanks for having me back. It's always such an honor to join you. And thank you, Lucy, for your insightful questions.
You've been listening to Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. Our producer is Selena Reeder. Associate producer is Asiya Johnson. Technical director is Stephen Baum. Rob Fetters composed our theme music. If you miss our program live, you can subscribe to Cincinnati Edition wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Lucy May. Thank you so much for listening.